Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Ryan.
How are you? How are you? Come on, do I need to throw some dust at you to get you to have emotions and feelings? Rachel?
Well, you know, my dad.
Oh, we all know your dad. He's a man who fathered you, and that we all know the Rachel's dad backstory. We don't need to go over it here. If you just say, "Well, you know how I am with my dad," we all know.
Well, you know, there may be some details in some other podcast media.
Yes, you're right,
but not this podcast.
We all know about your dad and your relationship with him, and it really is why you have the emotional landscape that you have. Mm-hmm. I would say that you are really good at keeping your emotions in check and putting them in boxes within yourself. That's how I would describe my wife. How would you describe my emotional state due to my relationship with my father?
Healthy.
There you go, healthy. And I'm just going to have a nice drink of something that reminds me of home. Ah, yes. Oh, no, Rachel, now that I've had this drink, it's really making me think about all the stuff that's wrong with me and that I have more to do to work on myself. And to help work on myself, I do this podcast with you. This is really a therapy session for the both of us in which we get out all of our little frustrations and joys about Star Trek Discovery, a television series that we are rewatching, looking over again. We're in season 4 of Star Trek Discovery, the television series.
I don't want to be here.
What? How could you say that? I thought you loved me, and you don't want to be here? What, am I supposed to host it on my own? That's not marriage. That's not marriage, Rachel.
No, I didn't sign up to podcast with you when I married you.
That's a lie. She's lying. It's in our contract.
No.
It was on the ring.
By the point that we got married, you had even stopped inviting me onto your other podcast.
Well, yeah, because, you know, You were bringing the mood down by saying yum yum all the time. So I thought we better do it for another podcast where you can say it to your heart's content, just like God. Commander Nan-D from Star Trek Discovery.
Show is shit.
They showed her in the previously God. On in this episode, and I was expecting her to turn back up again.
No, she's one and done.
Why did they show her in the previously on for this? I don't know why. But either way,
the steaks.
She had some steaks. What, like T-bone, porterhouse? What type of steaks did she have, Rachel?
Steak of your ass.
Ooh, everybody! If you want to chew into my ass, give it a rating: yum or yum yum. How do you prefer my ass cooked? Do you like it bloody and raw, or are you a well-done type of person? Oh, we'll have to find out when you contact us throughout whatever means you like, whether it's snail mail or through a pigeon. Rachel, yum yum was such a
yumyumpod@gmail.com.
Well, yeah, they know that if you look in the description, and if you already subscribed and following us and rated and reviewed the show, you guys would already know how to give us a buzz. You would know that, but in case you don't, there it is. Rachel, yum yum happened.
Yeah, yum yum to you too.
Yum yum to you as well. We are looking at which episode today? What are we up to in season 4 of Star Trek Discovery?
The turd that is.
Wow, Rachel really liked this episode, I can tell.
Fuck yeah.
She really liked it.
Episode something.
11.
Rosetta.
Rosetta. Which has a rating of, just want to clarify that.
It was a 5.3.
Ooh. Out of 5, that's pretty high, right, Rachel? That's a 0.3
but
over.
But it's still down from a 5.8.
Wow, these
from
episodes,
last week's
season
episode.
Four's really going well. They're all above 5 out of 5. That's really impressive. I don't know how they managed to go over that. Right?
Oh, please let me just read the description so that the suffering of the main discussion can begin.
God, you're really upset with this one, huh? Wow. Go on, what's Rosetta about?
While Captain Burnham leads an away mission to a planet that was once home to the aliens responsible for the DMA, Book and Tucker secretly infiltrate the USS Discovery.
History, relationship with this particular episode... I did not like this episode on the initial watch. I do, in fact, remember this one because of the rather ghoulish nature of it, which is the away mission team find a bunch of baby bones and rub some pheromones off of them.
They say that it's baby bones, and then they don't acknowledge that it's baby bones. They're like, it's a cocoon.
It's a nursery.
Series of dead babies, and they just...
They didn't save the babies.
Ooh, love, peace. Ooh, I'm getting this from dead baby corpses and bones.
And you can see why I remembered it. Because there is that dissonance too, where it's a rather ghoulish subject, but our main characters involved within it are thinking about themselves more so than the thing they're in. But
they're going down there to get context.
Which is
and
for
kings. They don't...
You know I had to say it. You know I had to say it. Yes.
No, you didn't. You didn't. You wanted to.
No,
you
I had to.
You like it.
Lorca told me to.
You like it. That's why you do it.
Remember?
Because you liked it. Because you are good at it.
And I'm great at it. Now, I didn't like this episode for a numerous amount of reasons, mainly coming down to the dreariness of it on a visual level and tonally.
It's fucking ugly.
It's ugly thematically, tonally, and visually. I did not enjoy it that first time. I can gather from you that this was not one that you have a particular fondness for in your heart.
I was very blasé about this episode, the first watching. I was like, yep, it's fucking bullshit. Get this done. Get this out of my fucking life. Mm-hmm. And this time, because I knew that I would be forced to have a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. Every fucking decision was stupid in one way or another. Mm-hmm. From the drop. Like you said, the previously on. Like, there's a bunch of shit in there that isn't actually relevant for this episode. Mm. For the following episodes, yeah.
I don't even agree with that, yeah.
Some of it is still relevant, but most of it, no. Most of it, no. And it has all of these fucking stupid decisions. Like, just... Michael's opening monologue pissed me the fuck off. Right?
Wow. I had zero opinion on it, and I was sitting next to you and you were fuming. You were just...
I'm ready to go off on this episode. It doesn't deserve it.
Can I?
It doesn't really deserve it, but everything... Like, you know when you hate somebody and it's like... Anything they do you find disgusting and aggravating.
Yeah.
You're just like, how the fuck could you do something like that? That's the point that I'm at with Discovery.
See,
thank you very much, my dear husband.
See, we get see what you did, Discovery writers. You see what you did to my wife? She used to be happy. And this is what you did. Now, Rachel, you might want to...
I'm happy on other podcasts
You might want to push back the mic because I actually have a startling revelation.
Yes, Ryan.
I rather enjoyed this episode on this one.
What? You fucking what? How dare you? How dare you? What the fuck do you mean? Dead baby
Now,
what?
I apologize to all of our younglings for Rachel's extreme blowing out of the audio there. I
fucking what?
I tried.
You fucking what? You're saying that just to piss me off, right? Are you saying that just... Are you lying to me? Are you fucking lying to me? Ryan?
So I rather enjoyed it.
You're fucking lying, right? You're fucking lying to me.
No.
You're...
No. No, no, I enjoyed this.
I swear to God, I'm going to come over there.
Okay. Calm it down. Calm down. Let's take a big deep breath.
Ryan?
Okay, so to explain myself, or as we call it in the biz, justify. To justify myself to you, my wife, and to you, the yumlings / listeners out there, I actually rather enjoyed this episode. But my big drawback to it is this
discovery.
This is one where the execution of it from a production standpoint really brought it down for me. So I actually have a lot to say about structure.
Thematic statement being said as dialogue.
Yes.
Over and over again. Wait.
Yes. I actually have some.
Smiling at you while you think that you're dying.
I actually have some defenses of that, but
It's defensible. It's defensible.
I actually rather enjoyed this outside of the visual presentation. So if
you mean
we
the floating
go
heads?
Yes. If we want to go to those negatives first for this,
I rather did not enjoy. No, you said that you liked it.
I do.
Start with the positives.
Okay, positives.
I dare you.
Okay. This was an example where they actually had the correct members on the away mission. This was not where it was like, why are you bringing me, Owo? This is actually one where the characters connected with one another and mirrored one another as well. So Burnham has to be there because it's Burnham. You have to accept that. But
Xenobiologist.
And I'm not even talking about their career
Xenoanthropologist.
Xenoanthropologist. I'm not talking about their career set either. I'm talking about their characters. Saru coming down there and having to be the first one to be attacked by this dust that gives the heightened emotional state, and it ties heavily back into his history, not just species-wise, but him as an individual. I rather enjoyed that. I thought that Hugh Colbo was actually utilized the most effectively he's been in the series, where it was a combination of his career as a doctor, his career as a counselor, and his own personality coming through to help even the emotional states of the away mission. And then actually Detmer, for the little character that we've been given, I actually rather enjoyed what she had to offer up and what Saru had to talk to her about. These two characters were not two that I expected to actually get material between, even though they've known each other since episode one. I actually rather enjoyed that. They all acted within their professions, but also within their characters. So this is one where, yes, I rather enjoyed it from that writing standpoint of they chose the people that would actually be the most interesting to watch go on the away mission rather than it was Adira because Adira's here, or Owo because Owo's here, or Jet Reno because Jet Reno's here. This is one where the characters all offered something to one another. That is a part of my enjoyment of the writing there. I know that you're groaning and moaning, but what do you have to say about that? Because that has been a complaint very much so in season four, where they've paired characters or joined characters together that didn't offer anything to each other. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you disagree with me? Agree? What do you think?
No, I don't think that that's wrong. But the thing that was going through my head as you were saying that is like, a lot of the time we don't have problems with the ideas of an episode. And the idea of this group going on the away mission, pretty fine. Like, it makes a lot of sense. And it's good that the president pulls Burnham up on her going and her first officer going down. Like, there's three members of command staff.
Just two. Hugh's just a doctor.
No, but he is, like...
I know you want him to be, but he really isn't for some reason.
No, I know that he's not the head medical officer, but he's always in the fucking meetings with the command staff.
Oh, yes. If we want to go by that logic, then yes, you're correct. And also Harry Kim is one of the command staff in Voyager because of the same reason.
Bridge crew.
Yes, yes. We'll just... What you mean is one of the main ensemble is going down on the missions. Yes, yes.
But he does have a position of responsibility within the crew. Fuck, I want this episode.
You
to
look
die.
So angry that I'm actually coming at it like this because. Because
I fucking hate it. I don't want there to be anything good about it. I just want to fucking hate it and be done. But, like, there are things that are somewhat possible. Like, I really liked one of Tig Notaro's lines, and I wrote it down because I'm like, wow, that's actually kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In amongst, like no one is always okay. And I'm like, that's a really good thing to say on television and to get in people's brains. But in amongst this other crap. And I'm like, I can't let it go. So.
Wow, you're really off, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Okay.
Is this going to be the biggest butting of heads we've had in three seasons of Discovery? Man, it feels like a while since we've been on such opposite sides when it comes to Disco, huh? Because I understand, because I did not like this episode on that.
I will legitimately throw things if you end up giving this a yum yum.
I was like you when I first saw this. I would have given it a straight up yum. I hated it. I loathed it. There are some Star Trek Discovery podcasts that I listen to that are bigger fans of this that also really hated this episode. There were some boundaries that it crosses that people didn't like, and I haven't liked either. My main complaint when it comes to the away mission side of it is in two parts. One more so than the other. The bigger part is that visual execution. The lighting, the effects, and those costumes.
So many effects.
Then those costumes of the spacesuits really detracted from my enjoyment of what was being shown to us on the screen.
Of the suits?
Yes, like when they're first.
They're showing them off. Like, there is an excessive amount of slow-mo in the first 3 minutes of this episode.
Oh, it's egregious. And that is where my problem lies. A lot of the problem that I have with this is coming down to that direction visually. The way that this is constructed in terms of what we're seeing on the screen rather than what is written. Visually, I had a real problem with those spacesuits.
They're
lighting,
fucking ugly.
We have to see those actors' faces, and a lot of them are obscure. Oh, like
it's
a lot of the faces
as
are not just
well.
Distorted by the bubble or the visor that they have, no, but the like, lighting internally
it makes
is highlighting
the angles look of their face look weird.
And there's a lot of shadowing on the important areas of the face, especially for three of the characters. One of them is Saru because he has the makeup on, so it's already hard. Then you have the two people of color who the shadowing and the lighting aren't really complementing either. And then Detmer looks okay enough with the lighting on her, but even then there's some definition in the eyes lost there. It was a real sticking point.
Looked the worst to me.
I had a hard time with Michael, if I've got to be honest, seeing how she was expressing
you in particular. This is what it felt like to me, which is it when I looked at Hugh's face, it was a little bit too much like
there's stretched his face in post to fit the glass of the helmet. So, like, his face is curved up against the glass.
There's something about the shape of it.
It's just...
that is off.
It's so fucking ugly.
I don't like the little bits of lighting that are on the suit, like on the shoulders and the legs. I'm not a fan of that either, especially when they're in those dark caves and those are the only parts of the suit that you can make out. If anything, I find those minor bits of lighting on the outsiding of the suit to actually be worse for me than if there were none. I was not a fan.
I liked the idea of them being their own torches.
I mean, I don't mind the idea of torches. I liked the old ones, though, that they had where it was like on the shoulders and there were torches out. Not these where they were just like little lamps that were on them.
Yeah, they're their own source of light. Like... they were like, ooh, you know what's cool? Little anglerfish.
Yeah, you know what's cool? Little lights. But I really had a problem with it on that visual end. The murkiness, the darkness that was present on the planet on the away mission.
Yeah, there's so much shadow on the planet, being like, you know what we can just do? It's dark, so we don't have to animate all of this.
I would rather have had this planet be the same. Like, this planet should have been the set and the overall design they used in the one with the Romulan warrior nuns that were protecting that dying race as well.
Yeah.
That was far more visually pleasing to me. I understood things. And it had that feeling of ancient and dying and... That was far more obvious there. Here, it was too murky and brown. I had a hard time keeping track of things. And my eyes just got tired of looking at it. So a lot of the vigor that was happening here, even if, say, you don't like what they were saying and I did, even I could not defend what was happening in those scenes a lot because I just didn't want to look at it. And that's a big strike. And I really want to emphasize, when I've watched science fiction, I will be more forgiving of bad effects and bad production. As long as the story and the acting is good enough, then it will push me through. But this is such a series driven by those visuals. Those visuals, again, the visuals is the word I'm using a lot, but those effects and the cinematography and the lighting... are so at the front of Star Trek Discovery that it's hard to see past it. So when they do a shitty job with it, like with the blue planet or the yellow planet, or in this case, the brown planet, you can't help but look at that. Just look at that and can't go past it. When we finish this season, I'll just remember the dead baby bones and the brownness of it all, rather than how I enjoyed the dynamics of the away mission team and how they chose the correct characters to put down there to have conflicts with one another, but also be a team with one another. That is what I won't remember the good parts. I'll just remember those parts that I didn't work, which was the things that linger, images. This is a show that is very much dominated by its imagery, and its imagery was very lackluster. Am I overstating that? Like, is that something that got to you a lot as well when it comes to this? Is that a huge factor for your displeasure with this, or is it more so the writing?
It's both. The way that the camera presents these people front and center, proudly, as they say, drivel.
Because the away mission, they have to go down to this planet that they know species 10C has been on. How do they know that? I don't know. They have some devices nearby that look similar to what 10C used. So they go, it must be the same.
No, they're near the hyperfield. And around the planet, there is similar tech. So they're like at one stage, tend to see maybe inhabited this world.
So we're going to go down there, investigate, and see if there's anything we can find that help
we
us communicate.
Need context.
Context to help us contact.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some hoopla about this. The United Earth Lady General, they're general now, aren't they? Has an issue with this, but they go down anyway because the script says so.
Michael knows best.
Feels like it's up to them to go.
Before we get there, I need to talk about the monologue at the start of this episode.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll just state this. Most of the monologues now mean and affect me zero, because there's so many of them that it is now just nothingness to me. When it happens, my brain shuts off because they're in such abundance that I can't. It's not valuable information to me anymore.
No.
So I don't get offended by it as much as you do. So you're very much gritting your teeth. I was there with you. You're fuming. I'm just looking at it going, what's the problem?
There's two things that immediately got me fired up in this, which is that once again, we have Michael in full God complex mode, having not learnt the lesson of every fucking season before.
Or the episodes previous to this one in the season.
That is a bad thing. And then she's just like, yes, this whole thing revolves around me.
Of course it does.
And she's like, if I don't figure it out. And it's just like, but you were just saying before and in the last fucking episode that you need to work as a collective team and you have a fucking supercomputer that's sentient now to help you. But no, it's up to you, Michael. You need to figure it out. And it's just like, what? As a captain, you have this responsibility, and you know you have this expertise as a anthropologist.
Yes,
anthropologist, but have some growth, please. Just please. Have some growth as a character.
We always are bouncing off like this, aren't we? There are those points where I'm getting super mad about how Michael's arc just keeps going in circles and circles, and you're just like, it is what it is. I'm bored of it. And then I get like that, and you get angry about it. It's just one of those things where they just don't want you to notice never changes, grows, never acts. She may develop more powers, like more rank. Oh, she's a captain now. She's saved the galaxy again. But
Ryan, don't you move on. Don't you skip her time as a courier.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What a magical year that was for her. And we really experience it every time they bring it up.
Pull anything out of their fucking ass from that year, and they do it.
They go down to the planet, and it is a desolate wasteland, which is fine by me. And I rather enjoyed the spookiness of the finding of these big bones. I get a kick out of that stuff. When it comes to science fiction, I enjoy those away missions where they go down to a spooky planet. Again, execution of this. I am really annoyed with this episode when it comes to that. If they were less reliant on music, had less obnoxious...
The music tells you first.
The less obnoxious visuals or disgusting visuals and better costume design, I would enjoy this far more. But there are many episodes of science fiction TV where the production of it is still lackluster, but the overall mood of it still transmits through even underneath all of that. there are many TNG episodes that have this similar fate, but yet I still get those creepy feels. Like there's that one Night Terrors, which I think is a rather lackluster episode, but it has an overall spooky feel that I get from it. And even though it's got a lot of flaws, and that's what I'm saying, this has a lot of flaws, but oddly enough, I didn't find the flaws to be in the writing as strongly as I did in all of these other episodes this season. The finding of the big bones, I thought, was a rather captivating sequence where it gives you an idea of what the 10C are and how big they are and how abstract and alien it is. And
but they keep on going, but it isn't in our database. You're beyond the galactic barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have more of the attitude that Hugh had of like, oh, at least physics works.
Yeah.
The laws of physics still apply out here. That's kind of cool to know. And I'm like, yes. That's the like, that makes sense as a way to approach it. We don't know what this is. So, of course, it's not going to be in the fucking databases. It's redundant information.
Well, no, it isn't redundant information. You have to have that in script so that it can justify why the stuff that is affecting them is affecting them. That's the reason for why.
Bad.
I looked.
It's not these two things. I guess we'll never know what it is.
Yeah.
Or Demma has a line where it's basically like, oh, it's not these two things. I guess we don't know what it is. Well, no fucking shit!
Yeah, obviously, but they don't have the luxury of just testing it out there because they've got other fish to fry. The fact that they're cataloging
it
as
soil. When is dust soil? Ryan, I can't get over it. When is dust soil?
I don't know.
You can get dusty environments. And that's technically soil, but they're picking up blue dust. And then he goes, it's not soil. And I just...
Well, they find it on top of soil. So he's delineating the difference that this isn't the soil. This is some other substance. This is some other thing.
Crosswords don't survive into the future, Ryan.
But you know what does? You know what does? According to Star Trek Picard, zip ties. But not a compass.
Not a compass and not crosswords.
Well, and he was doing crosswords in a very abstract way too, so I'll give him that. But jumping around here, Rachel, you are so furious with this one.
With Saru is like watching Culber freak the fuck out, and he's like, do you understand now?
Yeah,
it's such a I told you so moment, and it's just like
this is how these episodes work. You have these episodes in Star Trek where they go down and get infected by some crap and you think they shouldn't be infected by that. They're better than that.
Why do they always touch the goo? In every science fiction thing, Prometheus in particular, why do they always touch the fucking goo?
Well... here, they actually went out of their way to try and alleviate that. Because in Prometheus, they don't wear helmets. And they just stick their fingers in it. Here, they are wearing their full environmental suits. And they're doing what they know to be the best thing. But they're still encountering something that is otherworldly and unknown to them. And once they figure it out, they find a solution for it. Like, give them some credit. It's not like they just go dick about and go, oh, well, we found out what it is, but we can't figure out how to solve it. They figure out how to solve it once they know what the problem is. They're working off the information that they know, and they're in an area where they don't know things, but they have a limited amount of time, and they have a specific mission in mind, so they have to juggle all of these elements, and it's a substance that is crippling them, but not to the point of being inadequate enough to do the job. They still can do the job, but they need to get this figured out soon. I understand. Wait. I understand. There's a fuming thing here when it comes to a story like this, say with Prometheus, where the suspension of disbelief is very hard to maintain, because there's always that commentary, and this episode makes it with the president, of why would you have the commander or captain or the first officer go down on the planet and do the mission? And the answer is, well, it's a show. It's a movie. You have to have the main characters do it because, what, you just...
They're the main characters.
They're the main characters. Like, it's dramatic convenience.
Yes.
And that's what this is. It's a lot of dramatic conveniences.
It's a lot of fucking laziness.
And contrivances. But here's my thing. Is this even more contrived and more convenient than any other science fiction show, including Star Trek? Is this out of the realms? Is this beyond the suspension of disbelief that we would give to any other show? Or is it this strenuous because it's Star Trek Discovery, where the relationship with this series has been so poor, yeah, especially in season 4?
Yeah, it absolutely has to do with the context. These things get a slide in other shows. Like, it's like, nah, it'll get a pass. Slide on by, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that this show appears to be taking itself very seriously, it assumes that I give a shit about fucking any of the cast at this point, which I don't, because even the cast that I did like either aren't here anymore and were ruined before they left, or are ruined and are still here.
Mm-hmm.
Then the visuals are fucking disgusting. The writing is just overwrought and full of straight up thematic statements over and over and over again.
Mm.
And then you have the performances of the actors as well. And then the music. It just adds up on, like, I can't anymore with Discovery. I just can't. And it's not because it's any worse than it has been. This is not the worst episode of Discovery in, like, any fucking stretch of the imagination. Like, for me, this is not the worst. This is not the bottom of the barrel. But it's because I'm just drowning in the shit that is Discovery, and I'm angry at it.
Yeah. You're very much over it. And I have been very apathetic about season 4. It's actually been a very depressing experience in a way, because of just how much apathy is building up. And I don't want it to feel like that. I'd rather feel as passionate as you have been. You've been a lot more vocal in your frustrations, anger, and general dismay when it comes to Star Trek Discovery as a whole, but specifically this season. Well, I've just looked at episodes and I'm just like, well, they had an idea and they didn't execute it. Well, the end. And it's just like, bah, bah. Or there was the one, but I think it was But to Connect, that I really didn't like. But most of the time, I'm just sitting here going, okay, rightio. And a lot of my central criticisms this season has been, they aren't doing the things that you do in these normal shows. Like in Discovery's world, they grab these tried and true methods of the genre and they don't even follow it through. What I enjoyed about this isn't groundbreaking, this isn't a revolutionary story, this isn't anything that's blowing me away that I'll write to my parents and tell them, you gotta watch this. What it is, for me though, is this is a flawed, but well executed enough in terms of that structure and stuff of these stories that I know. I've watched so many Star Trek episodes where they have this, where they go down to the planet, they're looking for something,
it's a bog standard plot.
They get infected by some crap that makes them go crazy, mm-hmm. they have to figure out what it is, and maybe it ties into some character stuff, and we grow a little. You have to be into those episodes as well if you're going to abide by this one, and I'm into those episodes for whatever reason. And to me, it did what you need to do to make those work. While in other episodes, like, say, All In, it had the caper and the poker game stuff, and it just refused to abide by any of the methods that make those stories function. This one, they did, but it's just those...
This episode is much, much more simple than many other episodes of Discovery.
And
we have the away mission and the stuff on the ship.
That's it.
And there's lots of things happening within those two storylines because it's not just one person or one character in each situation that's being focused on or a specific relationship. It's Burnham, Saru, Hugh and Detmer all get moments, all are having a story while on the away mission. And on the ship, Book has his stuff that he's doing, getting involved in the with the general. And then there's also Tarkus stuff. So even though it almost appears more simplified than most episodes, it's still cluttered and busy with all of these things going on at the same time. But it's like they have bigger anchor points. They have one specific anchor. This is the away mission storyline, and the characters are having a story that relates to the fact that they're on a fucking away mission. And the stuff that's happening on the ship matters and is happening because those people are on the away mission. So there's a very clear A and B plot, and you know what's happening, you know what the purpose is. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with the delivery of that. In terms of the visuals, but also the script itself, the way that it juggles those things and tosses between those things. Like, they keep on saying things that they think are super fucking cool.
I agree.
And insightful. And it's just like, oh my God, stop reading from somebody's 2013 Tumblr blog posts.
I wanted to ask about that specifically. So to me, one of the things that I've been really grappling with over the last couple of weeks, because I've been watching some older Star Trek and I've been watching this, and in both shows, they will very obviously and very deliberately lay it out, the exposition and the theme. Just spread it on nice and thick.
Yeah.
Both do that.
I was oddly flashing back to Drumhead when watching
I was also thinking of TOS as well a lot. But I was curious about what you just said, the 2013 Tumblr blog dialogue. And I am wondering is it just the dialogue? Is it like the specific way the dialogue goes rather than the fact that they're overstating themes? Because Star Trek is always overstating themes, but they used to say it in a way that we liked. And now they say it in a way where it is very much a Tumblr inspo blog type thing where they have connection and mood and they have like that Instagram filter on their photos. That's how I would describe the overall vibe of Discovery. I always wonder that because we always go back to, we always criticize about like, they're always laying on the themes too thick. Connection, connection, family, family, we get it. But I look at old episodes of TNG or Voyager. They do the exact same shit. Chakotay, Harry Kim, Deanna Troi, they're the dispensers of this all the time. And But they have it in a certain cadence and vernacular with certain phrasing that we find more passable, I guess.
Here's where I land on it. Yes. Ultimately, yes. It has to do with the writing and the way that those things are done, not the fact that they're doing them.
Mm.
And here's the analogy that I want to try out. Let's try this one on. Too many lines from Discovery feel like they are meant to be on a like quasi meme thing that your mum shared on Facebook.
Mm. I totally agree. There is a very
nobody
much...
is okay all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
If they can feel, they can connect. Empathy can be the most difficult thing sometimes.
Mm. I would love to see these actors deliver these lines, the exact same lines, but in that stiff, clipped manner that they did in the 90s. And I would really like to know if we would be complaining. Because I don't know. I keep thinking about if Janeway said these exact same lines, would I think they're good or not? Because that is the struggle, because we don't like the general modernness and colloquialness and overall wankiness of this. But it's a thought exercise that's been going through my brain a lot, because when I was watching this, I get annoyed at the overstating of themes as well. And I get annoyed at the randomly placed jokes. And I get annoyed at when you have a scene that was good and they just keep going a little too long. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, that was a good... my favorite scene in the episode, one that I think is actually very much a TOS scene. I imagine this scene happening between Spock and Jim, which is the President Rilik scene with the... I can't remember the guy's name. He's like a doctor guy.
Replacement David Cronenberg.
The replacement David Cronenberg guy, and he's doing the crossword. And you have that conversation between the two.
Yeah.
I could imagine that between Tuvok and Janeway. I can imagine that between Spock and Jim. With little to no dialogue actually changed. I thought that was actually a very effective scene. I thought that felt ripped right from the past, especially even
but
with the little touch of it being
out of place. It's just like, I don't hate this. I don't hate this. Why is this here? Because it's just like, it is taking away from those two main plots. Because we have the away mission, we have the stuff happening on the ship, mainly with Book and Taka. But then we also have the President Rilik stuff and the Adira stuff.
The Adira stuff is garbage.
But
this one has...
Before we move on, though, sorry.
No, I don't want to move to the Adira stuff. I still want to keep on this Rilik.
I do want to sort of link back to something that you were saying, though, about how, like, if it was Janeway, if it was Janeway delivering almost the exact same monologue, I would not mind nearly as much. Because the way that the Janeway takes responsibility for the crew, but also works with the crew, I don't think she would have said the line that pissed me off so much is that of like, I need to figure this out. Janeway would have said, like, we need to work together and figure this out. But I, as the captain, ultimately have responsibility for pulling us through this situation.
Yeah, and...
Which it would have been presented very differently in terms of the way that it was written, but also the context of the character.
And again, it's very different as well, because Janeway, if she did speak like that, it would make sense, because her command was in an extraordinary scenario where she had to take personal responsibility for the lives and well-being of everyone, because she was the captain of a ship lost in space. Here, Michael's just a part of everybody else.
Yes, but she is, like, she's not even the sole, like, head, right? Because she's there and she's leading the ship, but she's sort of sharing the co-responsibility in lots of ways with the president, because they've divided the responsibilities up, right? And they're on the other side of the galactic barrier, and the last best hope for saving Navarre and Earth. And those are huge, huge responsibilities to be weighing on Michael. But she takes every responsibility as serious as she's taking this one. So it doesn't feel any heavier.
It doesn't feel special.
Because
it doesn't feel unique.
Always the galaxy riding on her. The fate of the galaxy is always in Michael's hands. Whereas the degree to which the crew's well-being is riding on a Janeway decision and actions specifically and solely is not nearly as common.
I also am reminded of in Babylon 5, there was a conversation, a jovial conversation between Garibaldi and Sinclair, where Garibaldi asks him about, do you fasten and zip or zip then fasten? And he proceeds to say, like, why he's asking and having this conversation, which is, you, Commander Sinclair, are far too serious. Not everything's the end of the galaxy.
Yeah.
And it was the writer acknowledging that they made the main character
too
self-serious, too much of the, I've got to save everybody, I've got to make sure that the last best hope for peace is maintained. And because that's dull. You want to lighten up your character. And they've tried to lighten up Michael, but here it's still that problem of she's always coming at every problem like it is the end of the galaxy, because guess what? Every problem is somehow related to the end of everything. So it is very dull. But I just want to go back to that relic.
It's not just that, though, right? It's the adding of the shadow and the highlights to a character. That's what that moment with Sinclair does for him.
And it highlights Garibaldi too.
Yes, and it adds depth to both of these characters in an enjoyable way, where it's not detracting from the moment. It's giving contrast to it. And it's such a fun moment that you really remember. And you're like, yeah, these two characters are friends.
The relic scene, although small, with the doctor guy, there's at least a three acts to it, because there are like three pivotal scenes. You have the beginning where he's an arrogant son of a bitch who's a bit too snarky. You have that moment where she confronts him, and then you have the end where he has to try and get on the straight and narrow. I didn't find it too intrusive. I found it great. And no, I found it great in terms of those characters are ones that I haven't been poisoned to. So I enjoyed watching them converse as people. And again, it was a type of moralizing and speechifying that I am familiar with and that I like in this franchise. Even right down to the its obligation written in the thing, tying the bow on it all. What it really lacked there was the little peppy music that would have played at the end of the scene if this was, say, in the 60s.
Yep.
It played that more poignant music. Ooh, but if this was the 60s one, you'd get a bit of that. And that's cheesy, but it isn't off-brand. And I like the maturity between these two characters where he has a point of view. He knows why he acts like this. He gives us an explanation as to why, and then she counters it. It's a mature conversation between two professionals who are in a dire straits scenario, and they are level-headed and agree and meet a mutual understanding in which one of them is going to actually try and get better. And then we see him almost fail, but he tries to get better. I don't know why, but I did rather enjoy that aspect of the episode as well. Again, probably down to the fact I'm not poisoned to these characters, but also
it was visible character growth and change.
And there was something physical to the scene as well. A lot of times when Discovery is monologuing and moralizing, it's very I'm standing detached. Still and speechifying, or there's ludicrous action propelling it, like this flamethrowers while people are crying their eyes out. And this was just a casual conversation at a bar where he's just like eating some food and doing a crossword. And she's literally like, she's engaging with him. She's sitting there looking him in the eyes while he's too caught up in his own stuff, which speaks to character. The physical stuff there reflected character stuff and highlighted the issues that were being brought up in the scene. Discovery doesn't do that enough. They often overlook that for bullshit, honestly.
The crafting of scene.
The crafting of it was very well done for my taste. And I know that we're going to go away from the away mission stuff, but I cannot stress enough how fucking crazy it is that they're playing with baby bones and like there's nothing mentioned about it. Like they talk about it, but they don't actually talk about it. It's rather ghoulish, and it's a turnoff as well that they're just so for a show that's all about high emotions, they really don't have much emotions about the fact that they're just surrounded by dead babies, huh? Very strange. Like, very strange.
Is each block thing that they're touching a different cocoon, or is it just one big dead baby?
I could not tell you because it was too dark.
Yeah.
It was too dark, but
okay, do you want to do Book or Taka first?
Can we do Adira because it's so lame?
Oh, yeah.
And so short. All I have to say, we don't need it.
Fly good.
We don't need it. We don't need
no.
it. It goes nowhere, and we don't need it. Adira is now admires Detmer.
Yeah.
And it's cringy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes up 2 seconds, and that's one where I found it egregious. Not needed, complete waste of time, devalues the characters involved, made me roll my eyes. I gritted my teeth every time that it came into focus.
Oh, it's still happening. It's still happening.
It's, why is it here?
Oh, it's to give Adira something to do.
That's it. Nothing else. We got to have Adira in that episode.
It's like, oh, Adira admires somebody that's not Michael.
Why not admire Tig Notaro? Because Tig's actually more important in this episode too for the Adira side of things.
Tig gives perspective.
You could rewrite it where they're getting on because they're both engineers.
Yeah, and Tig gives no fucks.
It would have been a chalk and cheese relationship where Adira gives all the fucks and Tig gives no fucks. Would have been really cool.
No.
Other than it's just something for Adira to do. What is the reason for this? Is that, because I really can't think of any other reason other than we've got to give Adira something to do. Got to give Adira a fascination, some sort.
All of it ends up back there for me. It's just like, oh, it could be to, like, you know, because it's just like, oh, it would be kind of boring. We did sort of address the Grays not here anymore
And we've also done the they're an ensign and learning how to be an ensign thing. So what's something else? What's something else? 'Cause what else can we do with this character?
I've got two words for you. Wesley Crusher.
Yes. Exactly where my mind was going.
I was a teenage boy, a young preteen and teenage boy watching TNG. I never liked Wesley Crusher, never related to Wesley Crusher. I found Wesley Crusher to be polarizing for myself because I wish I didn't hate him as much as I did, but I did. Because he felt disingenuous. He had hobbies that were so ludicrously writerly. And he was given storylines that I just scratched my head at as a young person. And today, where I go, why? And I feel the same with Adira. And it makes me go, should we just not have that type of character in Star Trek? But then I remember I like Naomi Wildman. Naomi Wildman, young person who's interested in Starfleet stuff and science stuff, and precocious and a smart aleck, and is drawn to one of our main characters like they're a parent or perhaps an elder sibling, and Adira's doing that too. Why is it that I don't like Naomi Wildman? And I guess it may just come down simply to out of the three of them, the one who played Naomi Wildman was the most charming actor to watch. Is it
also we get a lot less of Naomi than those other characters?
Rarely is it a Naomi is the main character of an episode. Usually the Naomi stuff is attached to one of our main characters, like Seven. Usually Naomi is in a Seven plot.
Yes.
And we like Seven of Nine a lot. So Naomi we tolerate a lot
and
more.
And Naomi brings out an interesting and different side of those characters that she interacts with.
Naomi Wildman, when I watched as a kid, was one of my favorite characters in Voyager because she was.
You still adore her.
I still do, because she did two things for my enjoyment. She was someone I wanted to be because she was beyond myself, but also I related to her because she felt like me as a kid. Like she felt like how I would be if I was a child or a young person on a starship. It was, even though those two things conflict, they still existed in the same place in harmony together. While Adira, I don't know. I can't relate even now to Adira because I don't know who they are. I don't know what their interests. I know they're an art genius. That comes up all the time, doesn't it, everyone? You all remember that they're an art genius, don't you? I don't know about Adira. And Wesley, I just find pretentious and I want to hurt him a lot. But Wesley Crusher comes to mind, where they just give Wesley a bunch of bullshit because you have to, because he's there and he fills the demographic. And I feel the same about Adira. This is just something to give them.
Yeah. Now, Book or Taka?
Taka. There's nothing there. The actor is very good. That's all I have as notes. I would love to know how he captured Tig Notaro.
Yeah.
With where we were left off, how did Tig not ring for security before he could grab
especially
her
when
or
she was
anything?
Just on comms with Linus, I think it
Linus.
Because Linus is sticking around.
Beep, beep. Security engineering, Taka. Bam. I said it in less than 5 seconds. Would have got it.
Yeah.
Nailed it. I don't know how that isn't happening and how Taka captured. Show me that scene, you cowards. Show me, because you know what they'd have to do? Make Tig Notaro idiotic beyond belief.
Well, maybe it was in the episode just like Book and Taka passing through the galactic barrier.
It was a real struggle.
Just got cut for time.
It was a real struggle for Discovery to get through it, but Taka and Book's little ship made it through just fine.
Their journey was finding the
programmable antimatter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, congratulations. You remembered what it was. I couldn't tell you. Taka, I have nothing to say about him. He was very logical throughout. He had some snide remarks that I actually found humorous. I actually rather liked the little bit where they transported into Discovery and he bonked his head. Mm-hmm. And he was like, why didn't you tell me? He's like, what? Like, you're taller than me, sir. Like, I enjoyed that.
I made sure that you ducked because I told you that I like my having a torso.
I enjoyed that. I rather enjoyed that. He had some other snarky comments. I liked his whole thing about, no, I'm not feeling stressed. I've got a problem to solve. And I like that. That seems in line with his character.
I also, him using the phrase being under somebody's thumb. I was like, yeah, that's a phrase that character would use.
The embodiment of the character. There's a level of embodying the character that this actor has that some of the shakier qualities of the writing almost fall to the wayside because this guy makes it just look so good. But I still notice it, like the how did he capture Tig Notaro? You can't shake that one off.
That's not with the way that they block that scene.
It's very simple. He gets on, he does a bunch of science crap so that they can't be seen, and then he fucks around in engineering, and then he gets found, and then by the end he's kidnapped. And I like that aspect of Taka where
he's not kidnapped.
No, he's kidnapped Tig Notaro. What I liked about Taka is he's the type of bad guy or bad person who is all, I'm a genius. I'll sort this out. But how they sort things out just leads to a new problem to solve and a new one and a new one and a new one. So when it did end with the, oh yeah, I've kidnapped Tig Notaro, I actually like that as an idea of just we went on this and, you had your little mission and that went all fine. My mission, on the other hand, he's a new problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. He's a type of character where he necessitates those incidents and kinks in the story.
Yes, that's
It doesn't
true.
Feel contrived when it happens through him for some reason. I don't know why. I think it's just because he's a character with a massive amount of bravado, but the universe will shit on him when it takes the chance. And
yeah, like, he has a tendency to end up in bad situations. Like, it's not even bad luck. It's just like ending up with the Emerald Chain and the way that he approached his work with the Federation also. It's just like, oh, God, you think you get the short end of the stick all the fucking time,
blowing up
you?
The thing and then it doesn't even work. And then it
the power source is
on the other side. And I like that about this villain, where every time he does a villainous act, there's no reward for him.
No.
It is a lesson that Discovery has learned because other villainous characters like Giorgio or Control, they would do heinous things and they would succeed. And in a way, it always felt like the show was acknowledging, like, actually, they're cool though, or they're good, or see, things work out if you're bad sometimes. And I'm not saying that villains
murdered
should
millions, but she looked good in those boots.
And I'm not saying that villains should never be able to succeed. I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is I'm praising the fact that for this particular villainous character, every time he does take a step towards his arrogance and ego, the universe kicks him down for it and he doesn't learn because that's who he is.
Too arrogant for that.
Book, what do you have to say?
Book does things.
He was your favorite character last season. Just want to touch base. How are you with Book? He's doing stuff.
Yeah, I don't like him anymore.
He's not hot enough to ignore the writing.
No.
He wore a new jumper today.
You were not a fan of that jumper.
I think it just threw me because I've never seen it before. I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
But
it's like, oh, he had time to change outfits as he went through the galactic barrier.
Yeah. He actually picked it up from another planet on the outside of the galactic barrier that's just over there, but yeah, discovered it and find it because they were too busy playing with baby bones.
Didn't offer Taka a change of clothes, though.
Taka doesn't want any.
Hey, what if the new suits were from the same planet?
Oh, yeah. There you go. They all bought it from that merchant planet. Book, what do you have to say? He's doing things. What's he doing and how do you feel?
So, Book is helping Taka get over to Discovery because they have to install this patch so that they can parasite themselves onto Discovery when they go through the hyperfield so that then they can more easily blow up the DMA. And then he's just like, oh, this lady's angry. I bet we can convince her to do shady shit.
The lady being?
The general from United Earth.
Seems in line with her character.
She's wearing a cape.
She is wearing a cape. That's how you know she's villainous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cape and a little hat. Dangerous. Dangerous woman.
A black cape.
Yep.
He eavesdrops on her complaining.
Oh my god, there are so many CGI
things.
Space keyboards.
Oh, the CG is off the chain.
The CG screens that like people pop up with their hand gestures and then type on, like they're used a lot in this episode. And when Book types that whole ass message, barely moving his fucking fingers.
Well, he's an alien. Maybe he moves him different. God. I know you're getting real frustrated. I don't like this. I don't like this a lot, actually. The Book gets an inside agent that is the evil yet not evil Earth general. I didn't like it at the time. I don't like it now, knowing where it goes.
Sense that, like, we've seen and known her to be more aggressive than Starfleet typically is, but it still doesn't feel right, even though they try and sidestep it by being like, nah, I only agree to this on the conditional that it's a last resort. Like, it's gotta be a backup plan, but I'll be your backup plan anyway. And it's just like, get with the fucking program.
It doesn't work for myself because he doesn't give a very convincing case.
That's
the flaw of it. Is
it's like, oh, you agreed with me before, so you'll agree with me now.
And that's not enough. There was not enough there for me to believe
things
that
have changed.
There's
since
not
that
enough
vote.
There for me to believe that she wouldn't just call security on him. There's not enough there for me to believe that. He doesn't give a compelling case. He just says one or two sentences, and I'm sorry, that's not enough to sway a person to do such drastic things. But it is in this show, because she's not a big enough character for us to think otherwise. She's small enough where we would believe if Book just said, go on, do it. Just do it. She'll go, all right, you twisted my arm, I'll do it for you. She's that small of a character where we, the audience, could potentially buy that. But if he was doing this to, say, well, to Saru, you wouldn't believe it. You would go, no, Saru would hand him in unless he made a really compelling case that would cater to Saru's thing. But here's what we know about her. She's an untrustworthy, ignorant, but also noble and brave and smart and good person. But she's also biased and she's fearful. These are things that we know about it, but they're very, very, very broad outstrokes.
Mm-hmm.
They're very broad strokes. So you can easily manipulate that as a writer. But
yeah.
If he had to talk to literally anyone else, like if you had to talk to the president, if you had to talk to David Cronenberg, if you had to talk, like, I'm just naming characters.
Not David Cronenberg.
No,
even.
No. I know. Yeah. No, well, he's different because he's also a bit broad and we don't know him too well. But like, if there's other characters, like even President Torina, if you had to talk to these people, you would actually have to write a very compelling case. But since it's this lady, where there's just enough, where
he
if he just says,
blur it, he can fudge it a bit.
Yeah, if he just says, trust me, she goes, all right, but only if you do this noble thing, if it doesn't work out that way. And he goes, all right, I don't like it. It's lazy. I hate where it goes. I hate that there's basically no repercussions.
Ooh, yeah, that's what,
her.
Yeah, it's like Boog gets sent to jail equivalent.
And she gets to be a hero.
Yeah.
She gets to say, hey, Michael, come back to Earth and meet the president.
I don't even think she fucking gets demoted.
No, there's no real fallout for her.
It's a time for the Hudar. Started out strong. We got a nice little chaste kiss on the cheek.
Yeah, Paul was in this episode, by the way.
Paul was there to witness Adira's embarrassment.
Oh, and?
And they didn't do anything with that. After he embarrassed himself, was it last episode? Mm. And he's just like, my dad wasn't really there for me, so if I'm overbearing, I'm not going to say sorry.
A lot of missing dads, huh? Michael's dead dad, Detmer's weirdo dad.
Depressed dad?
Who knows? He may have bonked his head real hard when he flew and they didn't sort it out by flying fast again. Maybe that was his trauma.
But they also acknowledge her PTSD therapy.
Oh, yeah. That's why she's really good at putting the... But Hugh, I enjoyed him. I thought
yes.
He did very well. This was... If this was more of awkward him in the show, then...
timing of smiles, of course...
I didn't find them out of place as often as in other episodes. There were moments where he was smiling where I thought, okay, this is a comforting smile, a reassuring smile, saying, hey, hey, it's okay. I was fine with that. He was good enough.
I just would not like that in my doctor.
I think it was, again, perfectly reasonable in the circumstances where Saru is... basically having a panic attack and his good dear friend Hugh Culber is grabbing him by the arm and looking at him with a reassuring smile. It wasn't like a big grin. It was a comfortable, quiet, reassuring smile. I thought it was...
Just with the way that they edit their faces.
And also Saru's having a freak out, so we're seeing it from freak out POV, so it's like shaking and all crazy.
It's just a bit too odd. Like,
it's not him delivering scary information like in other episodes where he has a big grin where he's like, we're going to die, guys. The universe is going to be exploded by monsters. And he's got a big smile. Here it was the type of thing where him smiling with the lines of dialogue given made sense. Like, hey, Saru, it's going to be okay, man. You're doing great. You've been great. You know, reassurance. He's counseling. He's not Deanna Troi when she's a counselor where she's all like cold and emotionless and you feel like you're being judged silently by her. Him, I thought he was great, honestly. I wish that this was him in the show more often. If this was the character of Hugh Culber in every episode, he would definitely be one where I would say he's a favorite of modern Star Trek
that
because he's got...
scene with... near the, like, he is solid. Like, he gets that cute little kiss with Stamets at the start, and then he's there throughout the whole of the mission, and that...
he solves problems.
Little scene at the end where he's having that drink that reminds him of home, and that little bit of honesty that he can have with his captain worked pretty well.
And his problem of being the guy that has to maintain composure to help others was reflected in the episode. Even though he was cracking up, he had to maintain that composure to help Saru and to help Michael. But at the end, he has that drink and admits to himself and to Michael that he actually needs to acknowledge his own feelings and keep himself in check and actually explore himself more deeply. Mm-hmm. And this is a character. He contributed to the story. He had a personality. His profession came into play. Both of his professions came into play. Like, he helped solve the problem. He helped analyze it, detect it. My jaw's on the floor right now because I'm describing a character that has not been here for so long. Why are they doing this? Like, I'm glad they're doing this now, but why has it taken so long? There was no moment either, like in the Seed Ship episode from season 3, where the other characters would do something that would basically be like, Hugh, you can go away now. There's none of that either. There's no, hey, Hugh, stop being helpful because now Michael has to be the lead of the story. There was none of that either. There was no sense of disregarding their existence, like any of the characters on the away mission. Again, that's why I enjoyed the away mission stuff. There was little of that present. It wasn't like the other away missions when it came to that. Hugh Colbert, fantastic in this. I honestly think this is one of his best episodes in the season.
Hugh Colbert in this episode, yum yum.
I give him a yum yum. Wilson Cruz, I didn't have a problem with his acting as much as you did. I think they could have.
No, it wasn't like it was just the weird way that his face is presented. Mm. Like, I didn't find the idea of him smiling as he tries to reassure Saru bad on the face of it, and everything else was like serviceable. It's just the way that his face looks in that helmet that makes
I would have also liked to see his freak out more. They cut away from that, and then he's like, I'm freaking out too. It's like, we already set up that he was beginning to, then it cut to Michael and Detmer, and then Michael's freaking out, like, overtly so. Yet he never did that. But he's like, I'm freaking out too, guys. It was a little weird. Like, there's some discrepancies like that, like how the bad guys, Book and Taka, got through the Galactic Barrier, but we don't need to see that. Or like, they just skipped some steps that
they cut corners.
I have to ask, on our scale of Yum being bad and Yum Yum being good, where does Rosetta fall?
Yum.
I'm not being facetious or funny. I actually am having a real struggle with this. This is probably the one that I've struggled the most, because I know a lot of our discussion has been pulling out the negatives. Yes. And each time I've tried to delve minorly into what I think of positives, I feel like I've only gone into the shallow end of the pool with it because of just our back and
there's
forth.
There's more positives.
I think there's more that I could have said more articulately, because I feel like me saying yum yum, there's a level where you and some of the listening people out there might go, really? After everything that we've discussed here.
I get why you could give it a yum yum. It's because my reaction to this episode is a large part of what makes it a yum for me, because I found it so frustrating and I can't let go of all of the stuff that's come before this episode.
Yeah, I can't either, but we're grading on a scale.
Yeah.
And I'm having a grade on a scale here, and I admit that wholeheartedly.
Yum being good, yum being bad. What is Rosetta to you, Ryan?
It's a yum yum.
Yum yum.
It followed through on a lot more things, and I enjoyed its structure. I enjoyed its simplicity whilst also propelling the main arcs forward without it feeling like wheel spinning the entire time. The character work was satisfying enough for my liking, but there are some things within modern Trek. We talk about this when we go over Star Trek Picard and Strange New Worlds. There are some things in the modern era of Star Trek that will not wash out. They will stay. The way that the camera lingers, those lens flares, the abundance of music, and that weird specific dialogue that modern Trek has. Those things are going to stay. We may not like it, but they're going to stay. We like Strange New Worlds more than we like this, but Strange New Worlds was guilty of all of these things that we've just talked about in this episode too. There's just a part of the DNA of modern Star Trek that will just not be altered. And that's how I'm forgiving more so of this episode, because these things are present, but I don't find them as turbo mode aggressive as the previous episodes of this season. I would not say that this episode was written by cowards like the last one, where we came up with so many other ideas of how the story would go. This one, I have no other ideas of how the story could go other than you could have eased back on this thing here and this thing here.
And
shot it better, lit it better, had better special effects. But that is, once again, I go to...
I don't disagree with a lot of what you've said. But for me, in the balance of things, it doesn't outweigh the bad.
I understand that.
I don't disagree with your yum yum, which is a far cry from where I was at the start of this episode. So I'm hoping that you've managed to convey yourself effectively to the yumlings.
Oh, I'm sure I'm going to get comments.
You are.
I'm going to get comments being like, how fucking dare you? You just didn't want to give a whole season yums. Apparently. Which isn't actually true. I was actually kind of looking forward to seeing if it would happen.
Yeah.
I just can't go against where my heart lies.
Let's see if I change.
We're on a curve here where legitimately we're now near the end of season 4. In the total of Star Trek Discovery, would you say there are many actually good episodes?
No.
I think looking at it all, there's 2 good episodes.
Yeah, not many.
I liked, 3. I liked the Harry Mudd time loop episode. I liked New Eden. And New Eden was the one where they found that Earth colony that was from the World War III people. And they had made like a colony, like they had been taken away and they made a colony and they had a Prime Directive issue. And I liked Far From Home, the one with the Old West Saloon and Saru, Giorgio, and Tilly had to deal with that. Meanwhile, Discovery was having to deal with parasitic ice. Those are 3 episodes that I think were legitimately entertaining or good, but everything else is garbage. Even if I've given them yum yums, I still would say when we're done, there's maybe 2 or 3 episodes that I would say are okay.
Well, I wonder if the next episode...
Nope.
Episode...
Nope. It won't 12. Be good. Won't be good. But it's the highest rated episode of the season.
Species 10C. As the DMA approaches Earth and Navarre, Captain Burnham and the crew of the USS Discovery attempt to make first contact with the powerful species responsible before it's too late.
You can contact us at your local vendor. Just walk up to them and go, do you have the yum yum? Do you have them? And they'll go, yes, we do. And they hand you little yum yum treats, little yum yum moments.
They reuse the same mug a lot, like cup, a lot in this episode.
That was...
And I don't understand why. And you were like, oh, well, DS9 has its mugs. Then it's like, it feels like product placement. It feels like the toothbrushes did. And I just wanted to get that little gripe in before we go.
That was a yum yum moment for you.
Fully into the outro. No, they're like, oh, you must be like deep in thought or something to, you know, not care about Klingon warriors.
The steamed bananas thing was the yum yum moment, because I was like, are we really going to do this? And they didn't even show us them, which was the disappointment.
Cowards.
I know, it's probably a Star Trek Lower Decks reference. Don't care, they should have shown us this in live action, you cowards. You can yell at me at your local social medias under Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast, or your foreign local social medias. You can email us at yumyumpod@gmail.com. Support the show at Patreon, Yum Yum Podcast on Patreon.
Yeah, we have, and then you can insult him on the private Discord.
We have an abundance of content on there. If you want to financially support the show, you can do it there. If you haven't rated and reviewed Yum Yum Podcast on your podcast hosting site of choice, you can and you should. And the fact that you haven't makes me very... I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed, okay? Just disappointed. I'm as disappointed as the fact that Nan was not here today. I'm very disappointed that they didn't bring her back. I really think that she would have loved to play with baby bones. She would have grabbed the baby bones, taken her helmet off, and licked them and said, yum, yum. That's how this episode should have ended.
With baby ribs?
Baby back, baby back, baby back ribs.